Where's my mouse? Come over here, you.
I thought we were ready.
Oh god, now I can't find my cursor. Why do I have so many screens?
Oh my god.
Drive the highway down the moon. Past the billboard where you see me.
See me,
see me, see me. Ask the people for the king.
Welcome back to the Silver Nitrate Witches Movie Review Brew. Potion number two. Do you like the little rhyme I did there? The podcast.
It's like you're a poet.
This is the podcast where we usually talk about how we talk about movies, but today we talk about where we talk about movies. That might not be as successful as the rhyme, but it'll make sense, I promise. And we are your Silver Nitrate Witches. I'm Isabel Lang, a writer, editor, and tarot reader.
And I'm Laura Valenza, co-film editor at the Brooklyn Rail and a writer. And we have a new motto this
yes,
week.
Yes, please share it with the listeners, Laura. Tell them.
The film bro is dead. Long live the film witch.
Yes. I love it. Love it. So accurate. Mm-hmm. If you're interested in hearing more about the death of the film bro, you should go and check out Laura's TED Talk.
That's true. That's line one. You got sneak preview. On YouTube.
And today, as I tried to hint in the opening that I don't know was super successful, we are going to learn a little bit about location, location, location. So I want to start off with, Laura, do you have any idea about that phrase and where it comes from? Because I feel like it's something that most people like have heard before in their lives. Location, location, location.
Real estate.
Yes! Did you actually know that or was it a guess?
No, I did. Isn't that like the first three rules of real estate is location, location, location?
I had literally never heard anything about where this saying came from before. I just knew it was a saying. But yes, it is attributed to the real estate industry. It was something that was documented in print for the first time in 1926 in an ad in the Chicago Tribune for a real estate firm. I actually always thought it had something to do with the movie industry, weirdly enough. I don't know why.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that location is probably almost as important to the film industry as it is to the real estate industry.
Yes and no, interestingly enough. So let's look into this. We kind of dipped our toes in this a little bit before. If you listened to our the fun fact last week when we were talking a bit about Legally Blonde earlier this season. So if you missed that, go and give a listen to the whole amazing episode as hosted by Laura. It's wonderful. And as I said, I mentioned this in kind of our teaser last week, but basically we were wondering, like, why is it fine for Legally Blonde to say it took place at Harvard, but not to say it took place at UCLA? And it really just depends on whether or not the institution is okay with using those names. And so after that conversation, I was curious about looking more into not just like the places where films are set, but also like the places where films are filmed, depending on the setting. And I was also curious about this because another film we looked at this season, Animal House, I don't know if when I said ended up on the recording or if we just talked about it off microphone, but like that was a movie we watched growing up a whole lot in my family. And as such, I learned a lot of weird, fun facts and details about it, including some information about the location, which was pretty neat. So it turned out that the National Lampoon, like they had a really tough time finding a like on location film for this. Like some things were filmed in a studio, but the actual like outdoor places they wanted to have filmed, it was tough because they were filming it in, you know, the late 70s, but they wanted a university that fit that look from the 60s. A lot of universities went through like, I almost said rebranding, that's not exactly correct, renovating or like updating in the 70s. And so they were having a hard time finding a place that fit that look, that it was still from the 60s. That would also, so they had like two things they needed to find, something that fit the look of the 60s, and also a university that would give them the green light to film because their script was so off the wall. And they were having a hard time finding a place that fit both of those aspects. So like, for example, they were going to film at the University of Missouri. That board initially gave consent for their filming. like their admin board gave consent, but then the information passed up to the university president, who read the script and was like, oh, fuck no, get off our campus. This is too much. And that happened in a few different places. They continue to have this issue. They ended up actually filming at the University of Oregon and filming most things in Eugene, Oregon, the surrounding town. I think the Main Street Fair was filmed somewhere else in Oregon. I did look it up. I didn't write it down. But they ended up filming almost entirely on location in Eugene, Oregon, and the surrounding areas. Because the president of the University of Oregon at the time had previous incidents with university trying to like approve or not film sets. He was previously an administrator at the University of Berkeley in California when The Graduate was initially scouting for locations. Have you seen The Graduate, Laura?
I have seen The Graduate.
Oh, good. It's good. I love it so much. So, you know, good movie, good soundtrack. Simon and Garfunkel. Love it.
I remember I recently heard, where did I hear this? I don't know if it was on another podcast or if I was actually talking to a group of people about The Graduate.
It's hard to tell these days.
I know. It's all the same thing, my social life and my digital life. but I remember somebody recently was talking about, like, oh, and they had, like, the weirdest interpretation of the ending of The Graduate, where they kind of almost interpreted it as, like, oh, and now they're, like, going to like be together and get married, and I don't know, they had a very different interpretation. Mine was kind of like, I think the whole ending of that movie is that very awkward shot of the looks on their face.
It's I would agree with you, the looks on their faces as the bus is driving away is very much a I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah it's not like a happy ending movie.
No, it's not a happy movie in general, but it is a great movie. So
it's a very ennui.
Yes. Okay, movie. Good. I'm so glad you said that. Because when he was an admin at Berkeley, when The Graduate like production approached UC Berkeley to try and, or I don't know if it's UC Berkeley, but they approached the university to try to get permissions, he, as that admin, wanted to allow for the filming on their campus at the time. But other admins on the board discouraged him from giving approval because they felt that the movie, quote, lacked artistic merit. Right?
That's funny, because I feel like that's kind of like one of the quintessential... Was that the 60s or the 70s? That
was in the 60s.
I feel like that's kind of one of the quintessentially artsy 60s
right?
movies.
I would call it a very artsy movie. Gus, can you make up your mind? Oh, hang on. Let me lower the table for him.
I mean, it has a Simon and Garfunkel soundtrack and questionable morality. So that makes it artsy, right?
Right. Exactly. Sorry. Excuse my desk moving up and down.
Bell's getting shorter.
Okay. Anyway, so then the film production, they went with USD instead. And after the movie became a huge success, this guy was like determined not to pass up another similar opportunity. So when Animal House came knocking years later, when he was at the president at the University of Oregon, he was more than happy to offer his campus. He did still consult with other people at the university. He talked to the director of university relations and also reached out to like admins and students on the Panhellenic Council, so like the Greek life, to see their take on it. And everybody unanimously agreed that the script, while raunchy, was an accurate and hilarious depiction of college life, and it got the green light. And he was even so excited to have this opportunity that he had missed years before, he let the filmmakers use his own office for the infamous dead horse scene. So that is the actual University of Oregon's dean's office, or president of the university's office.
Coolest dean ever.
Right?
Or coolest university president ever.
Exactly.
Wait, so Belle, I have a question here. Does that mean you are saying that Animal House is operating at an artistic level on par with The Graduate?
I would think no, but I think it's so great that this guy was like, that movie was such a huge deal and so many people connect with it, and I want the chance to give like another university that I work with that same opportunity. And when he saw Animal House, he was like, you know what, fuck The Graduate, this is gonna be way more fun.
I would say they are equally iconic movies.
Iconic is, yes, I would say that. Mm-hmm. Artistic, I don't know. and then, as I said, also, like, Eugene, Oregon, and some of the surrounding places also became, like, filming locations, including an old fraternity house that used to be a fraternity house for the University of Oregon. In a very similar kind of twist of fate, the fraternity that had that house also got up to stupid shenanigans in, like, the 50s and got their charter revoked, and the house just kind of lay abandoned and fell into disrepair. And so the interior shots of the frat house were on a studio, but the exterior shots, like, whenever they're hauling everything out of the house and, like, the cow and the beer and everything, that is this, like, abandoned and derelict fraternity house on the University of Oregon's campus.
That place is really...
Yeah.
Decrepit looking.
Yeah.
But also, I will say, though, in defense of the artistic value of Animal mm-hmm. House, that John Belushi paints masterpieces with his eyebrows.
Absolutely. That man does more acting with the top half of his face than I think anybody else does in that film.
Yes. And we're not referring to his brain.
No. Okay. And then I grew up and I live currently in South Louisiana, which... I think this whole idea of location interested me because, due to tax reasons, this is a quite popular place to film a lot of things. For example, I went to high school in the same town where Steel Magnolias was filmed, in Natchitoches, Louisiana. The Steel Magnolias house was on the main street of the town. We would walk past it every time you had to, like, go into town to do anything. I would have friends who, like, once a year would actually, like, pay to go on the tour of the Steel Magnolias house because it was open on the weekends for tours. I still have not actually done this. I need to go back and do that. But, like, that was a very big deal in that town. Pitch Perfect was filmed on Louisiana State University's campus. Unfortunately, they have since filled in the pool that was used for the famous riff-off scene. But that was, I remember it was filming there as a lot of my friends were going to school there. And I remember getting a lot of complaints that they were like, oh my god, I have to find a whole fucking new route to class because the quad is closed because they're filming.
Oh, see, at NYU, when people were filming in Washington Square, we just walked through the set.
I mean, that makes sense.
To everyone's chagrin and very angry production assistants running after you yelling.
Free extras. I don't know why they're complaining.
I know. Very cool looking extras.
Exactly.
Wait, didn't you say you had a friend who was like a backup dancer in one of the Pitch Perfect movies?
Yes, I knew a girl who was in the second Pitch Perfect movie, Kim Madsen. She was a dancer in Das Sound Machine. If you watch it, she is in like the front of all the shots because she's very cute and short. And she's got red hair, and she's in the front of, like, every one of the shots of Das Sound Machine. And, yeah, I went to college with her. We were both English majors. And I remember she was always very excited when it was, like, about to be coming out because she was pregnant with her son at the time, just, like, a few weeks or maybe just, like, a month or two. And she was like, I love that I will get to show this movie to my son one day and go, you were in Pitch Perfect, too. but yeah, I don't know where cute. The second one filmed. It must have been somewhere nearby, because I don't mm-hmm. think Kim had to travel far for it, but I don't know entirely.
But Pitch Perfect, is it set in a specific place, or is it sort of just, like, generic?
Generic university.
College, dream college,
yeah.
America.
Nope. Yeah.
Okay.
Let's see, what else? 21 Jump Street, like, the film, the newer film, was filmed in and around New Orleans. A Streetcar Named Desire, obviously, filmed in New Orleans with the streetcars.
Which, I learned recently, there's a neighborhood of New Orleans called the Desire area. Mm-hmm. And is that where the Desire streetcars originate, Belle?
Yes, that's why the line was named, because it would go through that mm-hmm. neighborhood. 12 Years a Slave, certain parts of it were filmed around Louisiana. There is actually... a memorial marker to commemorate not the filming, but like the place where Solomon Northrop was present on Esplanade Avenue. You and I will have driven past this. I don't know if I've ever pointed it out to you, but we've driven past it several times on your visits here. Oh, another one for you and Chef Mark, Easy Rider, was filmed around the French Quarter.
Well, yes, I do remember mm-hmm. that. Very iconic. End of the movie scenes, mm-hmm. I think.
Speaking yeah. of the French Quarter, Double Jeopardy was filmed partially in the French Quarter.
Oh, yes.
Part of it was filmed in the cemetery, in the St. Louis number one cemetery where we toured, actually.
They didn't use sets for that movie. Mm-hmm. They actually did.
Some of it, okay. Again, this is, so we'll talk about studios in a bit. Some of it was filmed in sets mm-hmm. and studios, but like the scenes that take place in New Orleans, mm-hmm. that was all filmed on location in New Orleans. Predominantly the cemetery, St. Louis Cemetery number 1, which we did tour on mm-hmm. your last visit here, and also on a hotel on Royal Street. And when I found that out, I was like, wait a fucking minute, is this the hotel we ducked into to get out of the heat? And I did a lot of like down the rabbit hole Googling. It is not, unfortunately.
No, because I can picture that hotel in the movie, and it was a very, very small. We ducked into a very big hotel.
Yes.
This was more of like
a that was small, more of a boutique, like, fancy boutique. Hotel. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so it is not the hotel. We did at one point when we were walking down to Frenchman Street to go to a jazz club, duck into the lobby of a hotel that had free water because it was really hot. And
oh my God, no, it wasn't just free water. It was free cucumber water.
Free cucumber water, yes. It was very nice. Yes. Anyway.
Well air conditioned, very comfortable lobby couches. God,
yes, and nobody came up and bothered us about leaving, no. So they were very kind.
We walked all the way through to the pool.
Anyway, but not the same hotel, unfortunately, because I was like, wait a fucking minute, but it wasn't. What else? In 2020, the World War II period film Greyhound with Tom Hanks was filmed partially on board the USS Kidd, which is a decommissioned Navy ship that's docked just outside of Baton Rouge. And then speaking of Baton Rouge, this is not about location, but about studios, which we're not going to talk a whole lot about, but I thought it'd be interesting to mention. There's a large studio in Baton Rouge called Celtic Studios that has hosted filming for such hits as Twilight Breaking Dawn, Part 1 and 2, one of the Fantastic Four films, not the new one, and Battleship, starring Rihanna.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the second day in a row that Twilight has casually come up in conversation
I'm
for me.
I'm so sorry. and then according to explorelouisiana.com, it's a tourism website for here, Louisiana has been a front runner in the film industry. New Orleans opened the first indoor seated theater in 1896. And when Tarzan of the Apes appeared on film, Morgan City served as the jungle. Morgan City is about 20 minutes away from where I grew up. And I'm not surprised to know that it was depicted as like in the middle of the jungle because it's like way down the bayou. More than 2,500 films have been shot in Louisiana since then. And then this same site, if you're curious, also offers like, locations and like driving directions to different filming locations that have like trails and plaques and stuff. So you can do like a tour of filming locations through the state, which is pretty cool. Okay. So now that I'm done plugging my state and my interest in this topic, let's get into it. I was primarily interested in basically like how places decide where to film, how we like get the information on how to do so, why some things are on location as opposed to studio. And this all comes down to the job of location scouting, which I feel like is pretty self-explanatory. But so like, do you have an idea of what that is already?
Yes, I do. Ooh. It is the practice of finding the perfect location to film in. And there are like a lot of factors that go into it.
Yes.
And one of my favorite location scouting stories is about Jane Campion and her cinematographer, whose name escapes me right now. But the two of them were really, really obsessed with finding the perfect location for their movie that came out a couple years ago called The Power of the Dog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You saw that movie,
I
right?
did, yes. Because you told me to watch it, and I was texting you various parts throughout that was like, fellas, is it gay to rub the handkerchief from your ex-mentor all over your face while you're lying naked in a sunspot?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm going to go with yes on that one.
But also, yeah, very good on Netflix right
very
now,
good.
Think,
yeah, very good movie about the... It's a very good, like, contemporary Western. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's set... Like, contemporary isn't... It came out in the last couple mm-hmm. years, but it is set in the Wild West mm-hmm. age. It's very good, like, doing, like, more of, like, the queer cowboy mm-hmm. genre reading of it, not, mm-hmm. like... John Wayne super macho mm-hmm. so it's all about
but like also like a little bit John Wayne super macho
but also a
yeah.
little bit John Wayne super macho
I would argue
of,
it's kind of about the tension between those two things
exactly yeah. It's really interrogating kind of this like the toxic masculinity of the Wild West mm-hmm. and the seductive masculinity of the Wild West
Ooh,
and how
I love
those
that.
Two things yeah, go really well together and also are very much at odds with each other. Also know that it's based on a memoir, which when I found that out, I was like, is that low-key a confession to murder?
Right, I remember you telling me this, and I was like, I don't know, maybe.
Also, did anybody else know that anthrax came from cows before watching that movie? I found that very
educational. No, I thought it was like a poison. Like,
me too. Like, I mean, I guess it is. Well, yeah, it's a disease.
I don't know. I don't understand it, and I didn't know it came from cows. Yeah.
But they got it from a dead cow in the movie.
Yeah.
And if you want to know the context of that, you'll have to watch the movie. But anyway, if you did see that movie, you'll probably remember that it does have a very striking setting, and you can very clearly tell that it is on location. And the setting is really important because, do you want to tell everybody why it's called The Power of the
Dog? Well, because it's that there's this, like, mountain range that they are not far from, that if you look at it a certain way, it makes, like, the outline of, like, a dog's silhouette or like a dog's like profile, like they're like a face, right?
Yeah, I think it's when the clouds and the sun are in the right spot, it almost creates like a shadow along the mountain ridges. And that's part of a really haunting, beautiful monologue by the cowboy who likes the handkerchief, right?
Bandersnatch Crinkle Cut. Yes.
Yep.
That's his name.
Yep. So it's a very beautiful movie, and it's very haunting, and it was filmed on location, which I think is really important for a Western, because I think Westerns became a really artistic genre when they really start to embrace location filming. And you get those, like very real, very expansive shots of the Wild West or Spain, because the spaghetti Westerns, made by Italians on the plains of Spain, which do actually kind of look a lot like the American West. And so, actually, to that point, Campion, I think the movie's set in Montana, if I remember correctly.
I don't remember, but yeah, sure.
That sounds approximately right. I'm sorry if it's not Montana, but it looks kind of like Montana, and I think it's set in Montana. And so Campion and her cinematographer, I believe they said in an interview at New York Film Festival...
Montana, that they spent
like a year before starting filming
location scouting. Just trying to find the place?
Yeah, because they wanted to find the perfect mountains to do their whole Power of the Dog bit. And they did go to Montana, because like I said, it's a real place.
Yeah.
And so they did start in Montana. And I don't remember the reason why, but it just, for various reasons, it wasn't gonna work to capture that time period. And I don't know if there were also financial constraints or something. They actually ended up finding the ideal location, I believe, in New Zealand.
In New Zealand. New Zealand's South Island. Specifically, the central Otago region.
A lot of movies are actually filmed.
Yes.
This isn't Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings and all the Hobbit films are filmed in New Zealand. You can still visit Hobbiton. Like, that set still exists, and you can go and take a tour of it and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of things that are rural are meant to, like, depict, like, a very rural pastoral place end up in New Zealand, because that's just, like, one of the few places in the fucking world where there's still enough natural space to do so.
Well, yeah, and I think that's something that's so interesting about The Power of the Dog as an example, is that, because I don't know if that's maybe part of the reason why Montana didn't work, is maybe they were struggling with really capturing.
It does say that key scenes include some locations in Beaverhead County, Montana, so maybe some of the places that were, like, in town or something like that, or some buildings, perhaps.
But I'm pretty sure the iconic mountain range is New Zealand.
Yeah, the mountains were New Zealand, yeah.
Yeah, and... I think that it's really interesting, like, looking at The Power of the Dog, because I think the location... I mean, Hollywood and America are so linked with each other. And then I think filming on location, when that really started happening in, like, kind of, I think, like, mid-20th century, that became more prevalent in the United States. And you get the rise of the Western, kind of starting with, like, that John Wayne-type character. I think it becomes this really interesting, like... combination of, like, Hollywood and the West as the two things that are, like, iconically American, and how Americans identify themselves. And I think the thing that's so fascinating about both of those is, obviously, Hollywood is all make-believe, but even the West, that became this kind of quintessentially American genre of filmmaking, is often make believe, mm-hmm. even when it became really integral to have the location shooting in the Western film. Like, you have Campion winding up going all the way to New Zealand to recreate Montana, and you have, you know, I think some of the better Westerns are the spaghetti Westerns, mm-hmm. which, you know, were directed by, you know, Italian directors and were usually filmed over in Spain. Mm-hmm. So it kind of all feeds into this illusion of American identity. And yes. even, I mean, like, a lot of historians will talk about, too, like, what we think of as, like, the Wild West, stereotypically, with outlaws and, like, kind of total freedom, mm-hmm. all the good and the bad that comes with that, is kind of a mythic concept, mm-hmm. too. That, you know, if it did exist, maybe existed for, like, 10 years. But, like, maybe in some ways didn't really exist at all, or is all part of a fiction mm-hmm. that we want to tell about our history. And, of course, obviously, like, a very problematic fiction, too. And we kind of touched on that a little bit by talking about queerness in the West mm-hmm. and masculinity. But, obviously, you can get into that in a lot of ways. So anyway, that's my...
I love that. This is beautiful stuff. Okay, yes, that's...
I really like Westerns, so we should probably talk about that at some point.
We should... that smells like a season.
Mm, yes.
So yeah, absolutely right, and a beautiful example. I hadn't considered that because I think I haven't seen that movie in such a long time, but I remember you telling me some of that when you were originally telling me to go watch this movie. So that is great. But yes, exactly... Like you're saying, that is the process of location scouting. So it may be something as like this, the creators of the film are doing specifically themselves. It may be something that is like hired out on a project by project basis. I found a lot of articles saying like that was a lot more common, unless a director has like a, like, who were the folks on The Power of the Dog?
Jane Campion was the director.
Jane Campion. So, like, unless, like, Jane Campion, you have a very specific, like, personal vision in mind for this, it's often something that's, like, hired out to, like, a company, like, it's called a location manager, to do on a project-by-project basis. It might be somebody who's, like, in the particular region that you're looking for, you may go to location databases yourself. A couple of these exist. I looked into a few of them, and it's, I think these are more for like more like smaller independent filmmakers. But it is still like you, if you were curious, could do your own location scouting for your own project that you want to do through these databases.
Well, I also definitely know of independent filmmakers who have bypassed permitting and everything and just do let's just film it real quick and run.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I want to talk about that later on.
Okay.
Okay. So
wait, before we move on mm-hmm. from the Westerns too, yes. another contemporary Western that is the American West, but it's not actually the American West, and that took a really long time to find a setting that would actually work and does have to do with how the West has changed since the quintessential Wild West days, is The Revenant. Which I know you haven't seen, but Leonardo DiCaprio movie. There's bears.
Belle doesn't like bears.
Belle really doesn't like bears. Oh my god, we finally found a movie that I could make you watch if we do a season of movies neither of us want to watch.
You could make me watch that and Cocaine Bear, because I've heard excellent things, but I'm like, I can't, because there's a bear.
No, but Cocaine Bear doesn't work, because it has to be, like, you have to do movies that you love that I don't want to watch, and you have to, and then I have to pick movies that I love that you don't want to watch, and I haven't seen Cocaine Bear.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I mean, Not a problem. I don't want to watch Cocaine Bear anyway.
I started watching Cocaine Bear, and I thought it was too gross and stupid, and I stopped. So, anyway.
I'm so glad we brought up Cocaine Bear, because I have not Cocaine Bear, but, like, Cocaine Bear adjacent stuff to talk about later. This is so funny.
Oh my god. Okay.
Western. Revenant.
Yes, The Revenant. I believe they ended up filming that in, like, the Andes. Ooh, in South America. I'm trying to...
That would make sense. Wait.
Where is the Rev...
Not set. So it's set in Montana and South Dakota. We filmed...
Yeah, because he's... I think Canada. He's supposed to be...
Canada was going to be my guess.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wait, okay. Other filming locations include Montana and Tierra del Fuego for the final scenes.
Yeah, because they need to be someplace with mountains and a lot of snow. Mm-hmm. And I think also probably old enough trees to recreate those forests. Mm-hmm. That's like a really interesting movie because I feel like that emphasizes the way climate has reshaped. Like, you know, I mean, a lot of these movies, you could think about the way in which population has reshaped mm-hmm. the West and changed mm-hmm. the geography. But in that one, you had to have enough snow and probably old enough trees mm-hmm. to realistically recreate this snowy Western.
Yes, I didn't think about
as opposed
that.
To a sandy Western. those are the two categories.
You get snow Western. Or you get sand. Pick one.
Yeah. You cannot combine them. Actually, well, now I don't know. Tell us in the comments if you know of one that combines them, but I can't think of one.
I mean, I feel like Reno is pretty sandy sometimes and also gets snow, but I don't know if that counts.
No, there are locations that get
but like Western movies.
I feel like most Western movies have like their vibes. So it's either you get the mm-hmm. snowy vibe or you get the sandy vibe.
I think
rarely combine
that makes sense.
The two. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I found a thread on, like a movie board, discussion board, whatever website with, some users who were claiming to be producers. Now I'm not saying that anything told me outright, like, obviously these aren't producers, but I am just saying like, these are random people on a discussion board with usernames. So I have no idea if they are actually producers. None of them claim to be the producers for these specific films, but, they talked about some interesting logistics. Sort of like, not like climate change wise, but other interesting logistics for why some locations are chosen as stand-ins for things like the West or whatever, with some specific permission. So like why some things might be chosen as like the actual, like why we might do on location. Why are you smiling?
Me? Yeah. I don't know, I'm just smiling.
Okay, I was like, am I saying something stupid? Okay.
I don't know, it was leftover smile from when you said
specific location. So why might we choose like a specific city as the setting and also film there versus filming like at another setting to be a stand-in? Some things are referring to like, you know, very specific landmarks. So for example, there's you know, something called establishing shots, which are used as a tool to say like, here is the place we are at. And we have that one shot of that one place to say like, here's where we are. And then like, not really again, because we've established here's where we are. So like, for example, Legally Blonde is a good example of that. While there are some like establishing exterior shots of Elle in Harvard Square that were actually filmed like, you know, in Harvard, but the rest of the film is shot entirely in Los Angeles, even after the movie leaves California plot-wise. So, like, a lot of it are shot either in studios. There are a lot of shots from Caltech, which stood in place for UCLA. So UCLA was not only, like, don't use our name, but they were also, like, don't use our campus. And then a lot of the interior shots from Harvard were shot at Rose City High School in LA, which also, hilariously, is where some of Pleasantville was shot, which is another Witherspoon project, funnily enough.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah. But Pleasantville, I don't think, is set in California either.
I don't actually
know. I don't remember if Pleasantville has a specific setting. Pleasantville. Belle, you would love it.
I know.
It's really good.
It just says it's set in a fictional 1950s town, but its filming locations were primarily in California.
Thematically, that actually kind of makes sense because mm-hmm. it is kind of supposed to be like generic Main Street America. Isn't, speaking of things that were,
which they would, who everybody agrees, like California, that sounds like generic Main Street America.
Yeah, I also feel like, speaking of things that are supposed to be set in notoriously overcast places mm-hmm. and then are filmed in California, what about a 10 Things I Hate About You? What's the one with Heath Ledger?
Yeah, that's the thing I hate about you. Is it set in Seattle?
Yeah, it's set in Seattle, but, like, it's so sunny.
I didn't know it was set in Seattle. I just also, I think, kind of assumed it was set in California. That's so great, because one of my favorite jokes from, I grew up watching all the Austin Powers movies. They are a big thing in our family. We love them. And there is mm-hmm. a great joke from, I can't remember which one, but they're, like, driving away from some big, crazy explosion scene, and they're on these, you know, back roads out in the middle of nowhere, and they are supposed to be in England, I think. Yeah. And as they're driving, they're clearly in California because they're driving around like canyons and shit. And as they are driving, Mike Myers says in his Austin Powers voice, like, isn't it amazing how England, like the countryside of England, looks absolutely nothing like rural California or something like that. And they like make a clear joke that they're like, look, we're filming in California. We know it. Get off our backs.
Okay. I actually have to apologize to Seattle for stereotyping it. 10 Things I Hate About You is set in Seattle and was actually filmed in Seattle. So they just got the sunniest days of the year for them. Because it is a really sunny movie.
Yeah. When you said Seattle, I was surprised. So that is interesting. So then, you know, I wonder why that decision was made to actually do that.
Speaking of California movies, though, and very sunny movies... Mm-hmm. Because I did Easy A by myself. Mm-hmm. I don't remember if I talked about that, but Ojai, California, mm-hmm. which they make a big deal about that movie being set in Ojai. Yeah.
I think you did talk about it a little bit.
Did we talk about it? Or did I talk about it?
I think you talked about it. I remember Ojai, California, but it's been like a few weeks since I've listened to that episode, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, that one was kind of interesting because when I was researching that episode, I was like, I wonder why Ojai, mm-hmm. because they could have just made it very generic.
Right.
And it would have still worked for the movie, but they really make a point of, you know, it's in Ojai when you're watching that movie. And apparently Ojai has like this whole like very artistic background and everything and a little hippy dippy. So they were really trying to like tap into kind of that fun history of Ojai with like these... kind of like funky artsy kids who are the main characters of the story.
Well, I wonder too, something that often happens with like permissions and stuff for certain places is there's like a certain amount of like plugging you have to do for the place where you're filming, or you at least like aren't allowed to depict it in a bad light. And so I wonder if they were just like, well, we do have to depict it in a good light, and also it's just wonderful, so let's just like sing the heck out of its praises. One of my favorite bits from 30 Rock is when Jenna gets cast in like a serial killer horror slasher movie, and for tax reasons,
talk about Cleveland.
Oh my god, no. For tax reasons, they're filming in some weird little town in Pennsylvania, and they initially have to be shut down because they cannot depict the town in a negative light, but there's a serial killer and that's depicting it in a negative light. So then they redo the whole thing where there's like posters up in the serial killer's lair that say like, I heart Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania libraries rock. And he's wearing a t-shirt with like the silhouette of the state of Pennsylvania on it when he comes in to like murder her.
That makes me think of Schitt's Creek when she ends up like, where does she end up going to film the Crows movie?
Botswana.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Cause again, it's just cheaper. Mm-hmm. Even though, like, because of all the CGI, they were basically in a studio the whole time. That's, I think, a bit exaggerated, but anyway. Okay, so some other location things that were interesting I thought people noted on this board was filming in, like, actual on-location. Some interesting bits are just, like, the ways that you have to navigate around... like filming in a place where people actually live. So we just talked about this a minute ago where I was like, my friends were all complaining because the quad at LSU was closed. And you were like, when they filmed at NYU, we just walked through the fucking set. Who cares? The zombie movie 28 Days Later is set in London, and it's actually filmed in London on location, or at least parts of the exterior shots are. But filming, for a number of reasons, had to be restricted to before rush hour began, because it was both like command from like government in that area, like, you have to get this done and wrap it up before work starts for the day because people have places they need to go. And also, it is literally the only time that the city of London looks like an empty, creepy zombie apocalypse. And so any exterior shots had to be done before the sun came up, which I imagine was, you know, a difficult time constraint, and also like interesting that they would still opt to do that to have the advantage of actually filming in London and having that like very recognizable place as opposed to like a random metropolitan somewhere else where they could, you know, just dump a bunch of money and have the streets closed down for them to film whatever they want.
I don't know that I would recognize London.
I don't know that I would, but I think like Londoners probably would. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would hope so.
Because I think you would probably recognize, like, not, like, every city in New York, but, like, you know, if it's every city in New York, fuck me. I don't think you would recognize every street in New York. Mm-hmm. But like when we were talking about Finding Forrester, you were, you know, ever very able to recognize like, oh yeah, that kind of building in that kind of neighborhood. And here's those details about those buildings. And the whole thing you had about isolation was really interesting. But like you could immediately clock that. And I was like, it took me till halfway through the movie to realize they were in fucking New York. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Another thing that I think both of us are also unsurprised to hear, but other people might also be interested in, or also unsurprised. Someone also mentioned how Vancouver, California is a really popular spot for filming replacements of like most generic American cities. And evidenced best by shows like The X-Files and Supernatural, both of which filmed almost exclusively in Vancouver to be able to very easily depict this like random American cities from coast to coast and the sort of driving travel in between. And I knew that about Supernatural. I didn't know that about The X-Files, but I'm unsurprised because I feel like they're same show, different font, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you want to do spooky United States, you go to
Vancouver. You go to Vancouver. Sorry, Vancouver. Vancouver. You're delightful.
I can speak.
Did you say Vancouver?
I don't know what I said.
Cooter Burger? 30 Rock?
It was not right, though.
And then, also, when it comes to location, looking up, like I said, there's like databases that you can go to yourself as a filmmaker without having to hire like an outside third party location manager. But that's something that you could also do through a local film commission, which I feel like I knew existed. And I feel like a lot of us are probably like, oh, yeah, that's a thing, because we could probably recognize, like, if you ever stayed to the end of the credits hoping for, like, a special post-credit scene, you'll often see, like, one of the very last things at the very bottom of the roll is, like, thanks to the blank filming commission or whatever for, like,
yeah,
the places.
Yeah, it's normally, like, a whole state.
Yeah,
like,
and it's an entire
the
state.
Utah Film Commission.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. Yeah. So out of curiosity, and since I had already written that I was going to talk about Celtic Studios, I was like, well, let me look at the Louisiana Film Louisiana Film Commission.
We're very tongue-tied today.
I am. I've had a lot of coffee. I just got a new coffee pot. And I've been having a fun time playing around with it, to my detriment. This happens every time I get a new coffee-making device. Anyway, so I actually ended up finding the Baton Rouge Filming Commission. So, like, an even more localized thing. So, like, I think there's one for the whole state. Yeah. So there is one for the whole state, Film Louisiana. But then there is also one specifically for, like, individual areas like Baton Rouge. And I don't know if that's like for every place in the state or if it's probably maybe just for like New Orleans and Baton Rouge, because those are not only popular filming areas, but Baton Rouge also has those Celtic studios. So as I was looking through that, I was like, okay, let me do some little tippy-tappy typing and seeing what I could find in the way of filming locations. So this is where we come back to Cocaine Bear. Are you ready?
Oh God, okay. I don't know if I'll ever be ready, but go for it.
So this is also a hilarious conversation like we were having pre-recording. Some of my friends, hello, Tori and Steve, I know you're listening. We all love like really bad B horror films. It's like our bread and butter. It's how we love to spend our time together. We at least once a year around Halloween will find something to watch. They're really good at finding things and I'm really good at just coming along for the ride. And I was over theirs recently. Actually, the conversation we were having before we got on mic was last night. I was over there watching a movie called Screamboat, which is a play on Steamboat Willie. It is awful and you'll love it, but that's not what we're here to talk about today.
Wait, but it does have an interesting filming location.
Oh, it does? I didn't even think about that. Oh my God. Okay, it does have an interesting filming location. It is based on the Staten Island Ferry being tormented by a small, evil mouse named Willie that has been, like, hiding in the bowels of the ship for the last, like, 60 years or something. And it was filmed on the decommissioned Staten Island Ferry purchased by Colin Jost and Pete Davidson.
And New Yorkers thought rats were a problem. It was really a mouse all along.
They do go through a certain number of silly ways that they refer to this mouse. And at one point, the main character, also named Pete, calls him Pizza Rat, which I think is hilarious.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. I love it. I was hoping you were going to bring up horror movies too, because I was like, blessed Sondheim, everybody. It's Old Hallows Eve
yes,
this week.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
So not that movie, but I was over there also recently for a different movie that we watched that, as I said, we talked about Cocaine Bear. It was clearly trying to like be like Cocaine Bear, except I think Cocaine Bear is like mostly a comedy.
It's mostly really stupid.
Stupid. Okay. Yeah. It's not a horror movie.
I think it is supposed to be funny, but I just thought it was stupid and gross.
I see, and I don't know, because I can't watch it because bears. But I've been reliably informed.
I don't recommend it.
My sister really liked it, and she said it was kind of funny and, like, stupid kind of funny.
Wait, which sister?
Sarah.
Okay.
Was it going to change your opinion of my other sister?
I don't know.
I will text the other one. I will text Audra and see if she has thoughts on Cocaine Bear and pass them on to you. Anyway, so it's like trying to be Cocaine Bear, except actually a horror movie and with alligators. And it's called The Bayou. And this like meth lab that is supposedly on the bayou, they get raided, they dump the meth into the sewers, it gets out into the water system, and these alligators, like the chemical structure of their bodies is altered and they turn into super meth gators. I don't know. It's really dumb. Anyway.
Are there real gators? Are there real gators?
Did they use real gators for the filming? I don't think so.
Okay.
They all looked... No. And we had a whole discussion about
it. I guess if you liked that, you'd probably like Cocaine Bear, but...
I didn't like it, though. It was real bad. I loved Screamboat. It was fucking hilarious. The Bayou was not good. Sorry if you made that or were in it, but I didn't really care for it. But anyway, the official description is, on IMDb, says, vacation turns disaster when Houston grad Kyle and her friends escape a plane crash in the desolate Louisiana Everglades, only to discover there is something more dangerous lurking in the shadows. First problem.
Wait, question.
Yes.
Does Louisiana have Everglades?
No, I'm so glad you asked, because first problem I was going to say is there are no Everglades in Louisiana.
The
Everglades refers to a very specific protected area of land in Florida.
It's a national park, isn't
it? Yes, it is the Florida Everglades. It's not like a thing that exists in other places. So, first problem.
But if you want Everglades and gators, highly recommend the Karen Russell novel Swamplandia.
Yes.
Continue.
No, so good.
Good book.
Anyway, so, and then as we're watching it, so we have this conversation before we even start the movie, because we're like, are there Everglades? I don't think there's Everglades here. Anyway, so as we're watching it, we're like an hour in, and all of us are going, none of this looks like a fucking bayou. What is going on here? Because, like, we're all from Louisiana. Well, actually, no, Steve is not from Louisiana, but he's lived here.
You should define bayou for our listeners.
I don't even know that I have a definition on top of my head. Let's see.
Okay, I'm going to try. As somebody who probably couldn't identify one, it is a narrow body of brackish water that looks muddy and gross and is contaminated with gators and connects swampy bits with oceany bits.
Okay, yes, connecting swampy bits with oceany bits, that's fair. It says Google's dictionary definition is a marshy outlet of a lake or river. So it does eventually, you know, they all go through and connect to the big water, the Gulf. But yeah, swampy, marshy. It depends really on the place. So, like, I grew up down the street from Bayou Terrebonne, which I would describe as, like, kind of a, at least the part of Bayou Terrebonne that I lived near, it was, like, a very big ditch almost. It was maybe, like, 10 or 15 feet wide and not super deep, and the city kind of built up around it. So,
did,
like,
you test that?
So, actually, yes. 'Cause a big part of, science classes when you live in, you know, down there, are doing
down the bayou.
Down to bayou. There you go. A big part of science classes there, at least in certain grades, are to do, like, I guess it's earth science or whatever, or geographics, atmosphere, I don't know. But, like, you learn about, like, those different kinds of bodies of water and how the water is made up of it. I know when you get to eighth grade, you actually go and do testing of water. So, like, you learn how to test the water and see, like, what's in it, and, like, look at the water under microscopes, see all the little things living in there. And there's, you know, Bayou Terrebonne was, like, across the road from my junior high, and so we all got in a big line and we crossed the road and we stood in the bayou and we tossed a bucket with a rope in and it scraped it on the bottom and you pulled it back up and then we brought it inside and tested it. And this was
we tested the creek.
Huh?
In my school.
You just said the creek?
The creek. Aww. The creek in the woods.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, that element of that science class, we would do it for the bayou because that was the nearest body of water to us. And then like a few weeks later, we would all go and do a field trip to LoomCon out in Cocodrie. It's like a water and maritime research plant. It's really cool if you look it up.
Wait, but so they are kind of a mix of salty and freshwater,
yeah.
Right? And they Oh, they are freshwater.
I think a bayou is freshwater.
But are they
in certain
not
places
really...
it can be brackish, I think.
They're kind of still-ish, though. Like, I don't think of a bayou as flowing.
No, they flow.
They do flow. Mm-hmm. Do they flow like a river, or do they just kind of like
it's a lot,
amble?
It's a lot slow. Amble is a good word for it. It's a
an
lot.
Ambling bayou.
An ambling bayou. It's a lot slower, but it's not like rushing, but it does move.
But they are. Generally, they are like a coastal thing.
Yes.
Like central Louisiana is obviously still relatively close
yes.
to the coast. Yeah. So you're not going to find a bayou in Kansas. That's just.
You're not going to find a bayou in Kansas. No, that's a different
okay.
thing.
Now, Belle, are bayous blue?
I'm so glad you brought that up because we're going to talk about that in a minute. Okay. So let me finish talking about this movie. Anyway, okay. The point being. We know what a bayou looks like. This is not it, right? So I look it up because this is what I do anytime I'm watching a movie and I get supremely bored as I go on IMDb and I look things up about it. And it turns out to have been filmed in the UK for like the brief few scenes that are not in, quote unquote, the bayou. And then in the Philippines for all of the, quote unquote, bayou places. So that would explain that. So then I'm like, how hard would it have been or expensive would it have been to find like an actual bayou for filming? So I go to the Baton Rouge Film Commission and look up actual Louisiana bayou filming locations. And there are, like, a metric fuck ton of actually, like, good places that are, like, plain rural-ass bayou, no kind of buildings, no kinds of structures that you could absolutely go to. I don't know what the budget of this film was, but I remember looking at some of these, like, quotes and being like, that feels really reasonable. I don't know why they would have gone all the way to the Philippines to do that, but whatever.
Was it comparable to the plane ticket for going to the Philippines?
Good question. I don't know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But when I did look it up, what I thought was hilarious and that I wanted to mention is that the first thing that comes up when you type in bayou for the Baton Rouge Film Commission is Blue Bayou Water Park.
So what came first, Blue Bayou Water Park or Blue Bayou the song?
So Blue Bayou the song came first because I have in my notes. And because I know you're going to ask, Laura.
Yes, I am.
That is not what the song Blue Bayou is about. Blue Bayou came first. It was written by Roy Orbison, which I do think I texted you. Although the Linda Ronstadt version has been like the more famous cover that we tend to hear. It was originally a Roy Orbison recording.
What? And the Linda Ronstadt version appears multiple times in Man on Fire.
Yes, it's in a lot of good movies, yeah.
Yes.
And there is no Blue Bayou in Louisiana. There is a specific, like, unincorporated area of land near where I grew up, near, like, between Lafourche and Terrebonne, called Bayou Blue. That's just, like, an unincorporated spot of land. There's a couple of campsites there. A lot of people, like, might have, like, hunting camps there or whatever. But it's Bayou Blue. It's not Blue Bayou. I don't know where the Blue Bayou comes from.
Is the bayou blue there?
No. It's green. Every bayou is green.
Bayou Bear.
Bayou Bear. What I wanted to wrap up with, and I also want to say, like, I did try to do, like, actual, like, book research stuff for this episode. Not a lot of scholars...
Research in the library.
Yeah, well, not a lot of scholars seem to be talking about location filming. Anytime you look up location filming, a lot of it is, like, history of the studio. What's it called? Studio systems, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, studio systems?
Yeah. And then the things that I can find about on location filming, like three of the five books I found were all about, like, here's where all of the places that Peter Jackson filmed Lord of the Rings in New Zealand are.
Okay.
Yeah. So I wanted to wrap up with a couple of things. One, as I want to go through the films that we've talked about so far and where they were filmed. So Grand Hotel was filmed in MGM Studios. She Done Him Wrong was filmed in Paramount Studios. In This, Our Life was filmed in Warner Brothers Studios. Salt of the Earth, as you talked about, and I would love to hear you talk more when we're done with this, because I know there's some interesting location stuff for there, was on location in New Mexico. Legally Blonde, as I mentioned earlier, was like teeny bit in Harvard, most times in studios and campuses in LA. Dead Poets Society was on location in Delaware. Whiplash, I'd also like to hear you talk about, because we talked so much about like how it was such a, like a New York movie, was filmed in downtown LA. School of Rock.
That's funny, because don't they also go to New Jersey at some point in the movie?
School of Rock was filmed in a mix of New York City, Long Island, and Staten Island. I think the school specifically that they filmed at was in Long Island. Finding Forrester was actually in New York and a little bit in Toronto. And then Animal House, as I mentioned, was mostly Eugene, Oregon. So some food for thought I want to toss out and just have like some thoughts on. Filming in L.A., movies that have such New York heavy settings, such as like Whiplash or She Done Him Wrong, because that was such a you know the Bowery, right?
She Done Him Wrong doesn't surprise me, mm-hmm. because
that would have been in that like studio era.
Yeah, for those who don't know, that movie came out in the early 1930s, and at that time I think that filming on location was probably pretty
rare.
Yeah. I really think that came, I mean, we should do like a whole season on this, but I think filming in, I don't even know if John Wayne movies were actually filmed on location. I try to avoid John Wayne movies because he just sort of irks me. But I think like the whole like really filming on location thing became very iconic when the studio system sort of fell apart and that more artsy 70s wave of movies happened.
Mostly in Arizona, anyway, she, for John Wayne.
Yeah. Oh, well, there you, okay, mm-hmm. So there you go. So I don't think She Done Him Wrong surprises me,
yeah.
because that really was like,
I guess that makes sense.
You know,
I was
the
just
early days of the studio era becoming really very powerful in Hollywood.
I think that makes sense. I was just a little disappointed, yeah. because it has such a focus on not only the time, but like the Bowery as a setting. It was such a huge deal.
But I think they also probably would have struggled if they did actually want to film it on the Bowery in New York City, because the movie's actually set about 40 years earlier. And I think they would have had a really hard time actually recreating what the Bowery would have felt like 40 years. I mean, you'd have a hard time recreating what the Bowery looked like 40 years ago.
What the Bowery looked like in 1985 it's compared to today. Yeah.
Yeah. Very different Boweries.
Okay.
You
that makes sense.
Like,
yeah.
Midnight Cowboy, I think that might kind of capture it.
Mm.
But anyway.
You said Midnight Cowboy, and my brain went Midnight in Paris for some reason.
Nope. Wrong city.
Where was that filmed?
I would hope in Paris.
I would hope, but you never know.
I think most of Woody Allen's movies are actually filmed where they are set.
That's right. Yep. You're right. Extensively in Paris. You're right.
Yeah. Because his movies, like, location is, like, such a character. Yeah.
And I feel like Paris is someplace that you could easily just, like, trip back into the last century without much of a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, She Done Him Wrong doesn't really surprise me. Whiplash kind of surprises me, but I also don't actually really think of exterior shots as being the main feature of that movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I think what makes it feel New York is the lighting and the jazziness
yes.
of it.
Well, I think I said it in that recording as well, as there's that first, that moment early on where he like steps out of the building where he was practicing, and as soon as his feet hits the pavement, it does the like ba-da-da-da-da-da, like big New York music thing.
Yeah.
And for me, that's really what made it feel like such a New York movie. And so you're right, it really doesn't seem to need the setting at all. I'm always fascinated when people or places choose to film in LA rather than New York, because I'm like, how much harder would it have been to film in New York though? Like, they seem like both very big entertainment industry hubs, and so I'm just always surprised. Like, all of the crime shows that take place in New York, 90% of them film in LA.
I think though Hollywood is still literal Hollywood is still really the core of
oh for sure
Hollywood, not so much New York City, even though it is kind of associated with film. I also think the other thing with Whiplash is it's such a psychologically intense movie that it's like it's very interior. And I think it makes sense that the shots are very interior. And I think you can create that in a studio or wherever with, like I said, lighting and music that kind of set a mood that evokes a city and evokes the character's psychology without actually being there. The Salt of the Earth stuff, I don't want to say too much about that because we actually went...
First off, if you want to hear a lot about the location and stuff about Salt of the Earth, go back and listen to that three-part series. But...
We can't tell you which part we talked about location, so you'll just have to listen to the whole...
But I do think it was interesting, like, so they were on location in New Mexico primarily because they just... I mean, not primarily because I'm sure they had other reasons they want to be there, but I'm sure a big reason is because they just would not have had studio access because of the blacklisting.
Yeah, they were literally ousted from the studio system, so they were making a movie literally outside of it.
Yeah,
literally. And, but the setting of the movie is also the actual town.
The town where the...
Where the events of the movie take place in New Mexico. Though the story of finding the location is really... interesting because there were I mean the whole thing is that like this is part of the 1950s McCarthy era and they were blacklisted, so there were a lot of people who were against having alleged communist film at their locations or stay at hotels there, so there's some really interesting stories about
there's like
them
some
trying to find a place to actually like house everybody while they were filming and get this all done, and like, you know, how the town reacted to them. And then on top of that too, they were a very racially diverse cast and a racially diverse
crew.
Thank you. Sorry, my mind went blank.
That's okay. I've been so doing it all day, like, as you were well aware.
They also experienced a lot of, like, racism and kind of backlash against this, like, you know, leftist political film by leftist filmmakers with this mixed race cast and crew. And so it was really a movie that challenged a lot of social values at that time and really quintessentially represents, I think, a lot of the core struggles of American history. So... that's my advertisement for why you should listen to our entire three-part series on The Salt of the Earth.
And then the last bit I wanted to see if you had any thoughts on were, so you talked about, like, you might know some folks who were just like, we're just gonna, like, sneak in and film something and hope nobody notices. Okay, thanks, bye. Is the whole, that's kind of like the plot of X.
Oh, yeah.
Is, like, you know, they go to rent out this little house on this...
Well, they have permission to be filming, but not permission to be filming pornography.
Exactly. They rent out this house to stay for the weekend. They say they're going to be filming something. They are just very specifically reticent about what they are filming. And then I think it's neat how they also use, like, you know, locations along the way. Like, they film little bits at the gas station first before they get there, and... things that I think are hilarious about the location when they do get there is, like, there's supposed to be a scene where she's, like, milking a cow, and they buy a carton of milk at the gas station to dump into a bucket so that it looks like she has milked the cow. I don't know why I find that hilarious, but I do. Also, there's a swamp in that one, and a gator.
Yes. Theta Barra is the gator's name.
Theta. Anyway, so I just didn't know if you had any additional thoughts on the sneaking around and filming in places similar to that.
I don't really have any, like, interesting stories off the top of my head about that, but that would be an interesting, like, follow-up episode to this. I do think, speaking of the X horror trilogy, I think that, was that actually filmed in Texas? Because that's another one where they make a big deal out of the Texas location, but I feel like they might have filmed that in New Zealand. I could be wrong.
I think the 2022 film X was primarily filmed in New Zealand.
Yeah, there you go. Another New Zealand.
Farm in Fordell, in the town of Bulls. Some scenes were also filmed in other locations in New Zealand, and a large barn was constructed. So then I would guess that Pearl,
is the same because it's the same set, right?
Yeah, they were made at the same time.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this tells me where Pearl is set. It doesn't tell me where. Yeah, filmed in New Zealand. Maxine, on the other hand, I would assume, because of just, like, the nature of it, I know you haven't seen it yet, so I won't give too much away, but just because of the nature of the story, I would assume would be, like, an LA-based project, because it does talk about, like, you know, studio stuff. Yeah, Maxine was primarily filmed in LA, California.
Well, speaking of the American West, and I'm pretty sure actually filmed in the American West, you can check out, like, the filmmaker Terrence Malick.
I know
did his movies Days of Heaven and Badlands, which are both very iconically Midwestern and Western movies, and I'm pretty sure they were actually filmed out there. And he does really interesting uses of location and setting. But the other really interesting thing about him is that he was really known for filming during the golden hour. Mm-hmm. Like, he was very big on not just, like, the location, but using natural lighting. And he really wanted that golden hour effect that happens, like, right before sunset. So, like, I know for sure with Days of Heaven, that movie was sometimes filmed, like, 15 minutes a day. Because that was how long the golden hour lasted. And it is an exquisitely beautiful movie. But apparently it was a real disaster to make.
Two things about that. One is that makes a lot of interesting sense, because one of the things that I was reading also about filming in the hours before sunrise in London for 28 Days Later, part of the reason was that, like, the, like, pre-dawn lighting also lended, like, an extra eerie effect to the empty streets that made the whole thing look kind of, like, gray and creepy. And so it makes sense, in addition to just, like, the restrictions that they couldn't because people got to drive places, why it worked out. Also, to do another bit from 30 Rock, because that seems to be our bit thing today, there's that one time where Jenna gets to film a werewolf movie, but they're, like, filming in Antarctica, and they only get, like, 12 minutes of sunlight a day or something, and she keeps wasting their light because she can't remember, like, what hand she was holding the flashlight in.
Yep.
But yeah, no, I was looking up Badlands, and just the images that you're getting have this beautiful sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, on the canyons and stuff and in the backgrounds of some scenes. It's really gorgeous. So that makes sense.
Yeah, that movie is
absolutely
really
worth it, I imagine. At least for the director. I don't know about the actors.
It's a very ugly story that looks really beautiful on screen.
Interesting way to put it.
A very young Sissy Spacek. And,
I love Sissy Spacek.
Is it Charlie Sheen? He's so young, I almost, like, didn't recognize him in the movie. No, I'm sorry, Martin Sheen. I'm sorry. I'm getting father and son.
I can, like, when you know that Emilio Estevez is also related to that family, you're like, oh, yeah, I can absolutely see that. But there's something about Charlie and Martin Sheen that's like, holy shit, you can tell they're father and son.
I'm talking about a movie from the 70s. So.
I know, but still, yeah, Martin Sheen and Sissy Spacek.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I love Sissy Spacek. She's wonderful.
Sissy Spacek is really good.
Oh.
I highly recommend that movie. It's one of my favorites. But,
Oh! I never actually read about it, but I just read the description. I'm like, that sounds cool.
Mm-hmm. It's very cool.
I love a murderous Sissy Spacek. Her at her finest, I think.
It's, really good big screen movie.
Unrelated, but I'm thinking about getting a projector to replace my living room TV so I can have, like, big screen.
I love that idea. Mm. I've wanted to do that for a while.
They're not as expensive as I thought they would be.
Hmm.
Think about it. Anyway, that's all I got on location.
Well, wait a minute, because you've got to talk all about Louisiana. I want to plug
the great
state of New Jersey.
IQ, which we just had a movie magic about.
Yes!
Exactly. The gas station,
IQ,
tell us.
Was, well, first of all, most of IQ was obviously filmed in Princeton, New Jersey, on Princeton's campus.
Right, because that's the university that Einstein and Zahratman worked at.
Yes. I feel so bad. Belle came to visit me once, and we did actually go out to New Jersey, to my hometown. I should have driven you past Albert Einstein's house.
Oh, we did walk to... I've been to your hometown a few times. When I went for Thanksgiving, I got to go to Laura's family Thanksgiving. It was very sweet. Chef Mark made an excellent feast. And we all
you know, all the youths went for a walk after Thanksgiving dinner. And
so you mean the youths?
The youths. We went for a walk after the dinner, and we did walk to the gas station.
Yes.
That was the garage that Ed worked at, and I took a picture for my mom because I thought she'd like mm-hmm. it. Yeah. But it would have been great to see his house. We'll have to do that next time I'm up there.
Totally. Mm-hmm. It was fun because, like, when we first moved into the house in that town, mm-hmm. the gas station really looked exactly the way.
Well, it had the sign for a long time, right? The Pegasus gas sign?
It had that, mm-hmm. yeah, the iconic Pegasus. And I think we all, for the longest time, like, at least in my family, because we weren't there when the movie was actually filmed, mm-hmm. thought that it actually had been a Pegasus gas station. And then one year there was a really bad storm and the sign blew down, and you could tell that was actually just like a bunch of layers of like cardboard. So I think it had just actually been a fake sign that the production team put up when they did the set there, and then everybody just left it because it was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's amazing that it lasted as long as it did though.
Yeah. I also have one complaint though mm-hmm. about movies that are set on Princeton's campus mm-hmm. because Oppenheimer
mm.
there's moments where Einstein is a character briefly in Oppenheimer. I highly recommend it. It's actually very well done. So there's a scene where the main character Oppenheimer is talking to Einstein.
Oppenheimer's the main character? What?
Sorry. And they're on Princeton's campus. It drives me crazy though, because one of the shots, like, Princeton is very old. I think it was founded in the 1700s, mm-hmm. and it has buildings dating back to that time, or it was founded in the 1700s, and it has buildings dating back to that time period. And they happen to get the one angle where you have the really modern building.
Oh, do better.
Right in the background of these characters who are hanging out in like the 1940s and 50s.
Do better.
I know. It's like if you just like to the right, you would have the perfect historic backdrop. I figured we could kind of like talk a little bit about Halloween vibes, but The Exorcist, set in Georgetown and partially filmed in Georgetown, it's partially a set, but the iconic there are the iconic stairs mm-hmm. that people go to visit in Georgetown. And then I was curious, Amityville is based on an actual house mm-hmm. in Amityville. But I don't think the house in the movie is the actual house.
No,
is it?
Surely not.
Yeah.
So the 2005 film with Ryan, which Ryan, isn't that Reynolds, was filmed in Chicago. And the one from the 70s was filmed in New Jersey, in a riverside house on the Garden State Parkway.
Well, Amityville is definitely New York.
Yeah, but none of them were actually done at the Amityville, like the Ocean Avenue Amityville house. No.
Okay.
Because I imagine, again, speaking about permissions, I imagine that would be like a weird whole permission thing, because the man who did, you know, the crime there, until some, I don't know how recently, about 4 years ago, Ronald DeFeo died in prison. And like until then, like the part of the whole, because you've also listened to this series of episodes from You're Wrong About, part of the whole weirdness of them buying the house and the confusion anyways, that like technically like the house belonged to him once the rest of his family died. So I imagine that like permissions, right. So like that was a whole hot mess and then buying it in the first place. And so I imagine filming permissions there were just like a whole hot mess that people didn't want to touch with a 10-foot pole because of all of the legal situation going on around it. Because he was still alive.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Any other New Jersey or New York filming gems you want to share?
No.
Okay.
Do you have any tarot?
I didn't prepare anything, but let's see.
Tarot.
Dude, the world.
Let's see. The Wheel of Fortune also kind of comes to mind, because it's sort of this idea that, like, there's, like, a lot of possibilities ahead of you, and it seems like when it comes to doing any kind of filming outside of a studio, there are so many factors at play, and everyone seems to do it a little bit differently. So it seems like just like a modge podge of a lot of options and opportunities. So I think the Wheel of Fortune fits for that quite well.
Okay, I like that.
So I think that's all we've got for locations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Take us away from this location.
You can find your Silver Nitrate Witches on various online platforms at LJ Valenza and at Belling303. Thanks so much to Fine Motor for the use of their music. You can check out more about the band at finemotormusic.com. Thanks for listening. Stay witchy and keep watching movies.